I'm Ebony K. Williams, attorney and host. Welcome to Holding Court, where we analyze the latest legal headlines that everybody's already talking about. But we dig deep into how the courts impact the culture. We break it all down, going straight from gavel to your newsfeed. And every week, we keep it 100. Right, Dustin?
That's right, E. Let's hold court.
Dustin Ross, my love, how was your weekend?
My weekend was incredible.
Where were you? Incredible. Where in the world was Dustin Ross?
Well, I was in New York City. You know, there was a lot going on this weekend.
Yes,
it was
pride,
right?
Boy, was it pride.
Oh, my
prideful.
Goodness. Prideful. I have had it. I'm not gay no more. I'm delivered.
You better stop on Natalie Robinson, run her ass up here.
Okay. Oh, well, come on. Hey. Hey, Natalie. What's
right.
up, Natalie?
Right. She I've said, been my dream about has come true. Go ahead now.
But it just was a great weekend full of a lot of love. And I think sometimes people misunderstand what Pride Weekend means for a lot of people. But for our community, it's a chance to, like, reunite.
Yeah.
You see
it
faces.
It feels like a family reunion
exactly.
almost. Because I was
exactly.
In Harlem. At Lido, and
yes,
I saw
you saw
all,
everybody.
It was family.
Yep.
Yeah.
And shout out to my boy Joe Morris, who owns Brunch Harlem, the old Billy's Black.
Yes.
They had a whole block party. They shut down that whole street. Had a huge
with,
block party.
Adrian, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
We walked past them, and I saw one of my good college friends who's queer. He was like, "Oh, did y'all go to the block party?" I said, "Well, you know, we actually walked past it. I got intimidated
because it was a lot."
Ooh, baby.
I didn't go. I saw everybody. I went to another party. Shout out to my boy Billy. They actually had the first gay pride party at the 4040 Club yesterday.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was beautiful.
That's landmark.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
And so I went to that because it started right when that ended. But I say all that to say it was
now
a great weekend.
That's separate from the 4040 Club that we saw in Atlanta at the Atlanta
Airport.
Yeah,
it wasn't that one. It wasn't that one. That was the one that the bar stools had kickstands. I was like, what the hell is going on? What kind of makeshift shit?
Oh, gosh.
Ebony, we was like.
Oh, yeah. So 2 weeks ago, y'all, Dustin and I had some traveling mercies with us as we traveled to celebrate Juneteenth. In Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, was that a time.
Yes.
But okay, so great Pride weekend. That's fun. So I was in LA coming back to New York. And I have to say, a little sneak preview. I've started recording Judge Ebony.
Ooh.
Equal Justice, the Judge Ebony coming to a television screen near you this
fall. We can't wait to see you bang your gavel.
And it was fun, baby. That's for me.
You are a natural for that.
That was for me, baby. When I put that robe on, it felt like, I was like, this must be how Superman feel like when he put on his cape.
That's it, because you had yours on. Mm-hmm. I cannot wait to see you on the bench presiding.
It's going to be fun.
I cannot wait.
So that was fun. And then, great day celebrating Pride here in the city. It's just, Pride is just different in New York, you know.
Yeah. It is.
It just is.
It just feels like
because,
a big.
Because I guess it originated here. Stonewall, all that. Shout out.
Marsha
P. Johnson
threw that
it.
Brick. She had it.
She was done.
She said, call me another one. That's
and what's
what Pride
it to you?
My brother gonna say, happy Pride weekend. I know y'all going outside. Call me one today, motherfucker. Mm-hmm. Call me one today. He
that's
said,
what
that's what Pride means for
it really do. Not today. That's what Pride means. So it was really fun. So here we are. Good docket. I was happy to see this first item on the docket, although it was met with a little controversy because what's not these days?
Right.
Legendary Michael Jordan is selling his majority stake in the Charlotte Hornets. Now, Michael is the only current black majority owner of an NBA team. Y'all, the second in history. There's only been two black people, happen to be black men, that have ever owned a damn team in the NBA. And Michael Jordan's the second. We'll get to who the first one was. If you know your history, you know, but we'll talk about it in a second. He's selling that for $3 billion. And now that will actually mean that there will be no black majority owners in the league. So, void to be filled.
Right.
Inmates in Connecticut, this one went viral. And it was one of those stories, Dustin, where the headline looks great. For some reason, I was a little suspicious around it, so I wanted to do some digging. So we're going to give you a little bit more to make some contextual assessments around the inmates in a Connecticut prison who have received associate degrees in partnership with Yale University. Okay, and University of New Haven, shout out to them. And I wanted to couple this with a story that I had been chewing on over the weekend from the former Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, and her take that, of course, I agree with. Skills.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'm going to connect those dots in a second. And then lastly, I just had to do this one because I was just watching the 5 heartbeat, so I had to. legendary Motown, you know how I'd be with my old ass movies, shut up. And then so Natalie's always like, where are you finding streaming them? What? Where are they streaming? I was like, bitch, I'm paying for them.
Right.
I'm renting them.
Yeah.
On YouTube.
Yep. I just did that. We had to watch Life for the friends on Patreon, and I watched it. I rented it
you
on YouTube.
To rent it.
HD,
yeah.
But yeah. I rented it on YouTube.
Oh, you didn't do? You did HD.
I do HD.
Not
yeah.
the SD.
Because I got to see it clear. You it's already old.
Well, you know, our eyes are.
Yeah, the
know.
Movie old and I'm old. Right. Something got to be in HD around this motherfucker.
Extra focus.
Something.
Crisp.
Yes.
You want a so, crisp picture.
Absolutely.
Okay, so this one, legendary Motown executive, of course, Berry Gordy. He's filed a $10 million lawsuit against a film director in the company. Is hilarious because they're saying that basically what in the Big Red mm-hmm, is going on
mm-hmm,
here.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that Berry Gordy is a whole thug, mm-hmm. that he put a hit out, tried to kill some folks, and Berry Gordy said not today.
Not today.
So we'll get into that lawsuit. Okay, so let's start here with Michael Jordan and the NBA. It is now losing its only black owner as Michael Jordan sells his majority stake in the Charlotte Hornets. So let me ask you this, D. What do you think prompted the sale at this particular time? Do you think it's the league, the culture, or is Jordan just trying to liquidate some assets?
$3 billion is not something to scoff at.
To tall.
So, and you don't really get many opportunities, no matter how successful you are, to sell something for $3 billion.
Indeed.
And so I think that that is what spoke. I think the money talked. Yeah. Even to someone as rich as Michael Jordan, $3 billion.
Well, here's the thing. He's incredibly rich. I think his net worth prior to this was being reported around $2 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now this is $5 billion, right? So now we're talking about Robert F. Johnson type of money. You know what I mean?
Like forever.
I mean, Robert F. Smith type
forever.
Of money. Excuse me. Yeah, so that's just a different level of money. And I also think when you're talking about professional sports teams and selling and holding, you know, it's real estate times 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
The market has to be mm-hmm. right for mm-hmm. this type of sell. And so obviously Michael Jordan has been nothing less than an exceptional businessman.
Very astute.
Very astute from mm-hmm. the very beginning. We talked about his Nike contract mm-hmm. and how Mama Dolores Jordan made that shit pop.
He got it from his mom.
He got it literally from his mother. Who is still with us today. So I think that was a very savvy business decision mm-hmm. At the part of Michael Jordan. Now, who's buying? Everybody wants to know this. So long story short, I'm not going to bore you with all the details of this, this, and this. Two white people,
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
two white men. One of them comes from private equity, which is very common
mm-hmm.
in this sports professional ownership space.
Right.
And the other one was already a minority owner of the Charlotte Hornets, which teams like that because it's like you're already familiar with the team culture,
yeah.
blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But now there is going to be a new minority owner that has the people talking, and that is hometown kid J. Cole.
Wonderful.
Yeah, Jermaine is going to be one of the minority owners of the team. And as we see from what I just said, sometimes minority ownership can graduate to majority ownership.
Yeah.
And I think everybody would hope to see that one.
And he's got a love for the game. He loves basketball.
He's a baller.
Right.
First of all, he's a baller. He played for St. John's.
This makes perfect sense to me.
He's a proud hometown North Carolina kid. Mm-hmm. Vietnam stand up.
Mm-hmm.
This makes all the sense in the world. And I think that this will be nothing but good for the Now, if you owe like I am, let's go back to the original black owner of the Charlotte team.
Mm-hmm.
It was Bob Johnson, mm-hmm. founder and CEO of BET. And how egotistical is Bob Johnson? He changed they had to change the name of the Hornets because it was the whole thing with George Shinn and all this bullshit. Why did he call the team the Bobcats?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
it was
mm-hmm.
a horrific era.
Yep, it was. And
it actually was.
It was kind of hard to figure out what was going on.
What the hell was going
on? But yeah,
with the Bobcats. But eventually, Bob Johnson sold to Michael Jordan, which to everyone's great relief. The team acquired its original namesake mm-hmm. back some years ago. So we're back at the Hornets. All that old new era gear is just popping.
Yeah.
Just, it's always been one of the most beautiful. Here's one thing about North Carolina. Y'all mm-hmm. can say a lot about my
Talk
home state.
Talk your shit, E. Come on.
But we always have the best looking uniforms mm-hmm. and colors across the board.
That
UNC,
baby blue.
Baby, that Carolina. You better ask
the
Maya.
The teal. Yeah, okay. One strap.
That's it.
The teal. From
the Hornets. And that purple.
Yeah, beautiful.
Because I remember, I'm old enough to remember when the homophobia was so strong in the culture that like black men didn't wear purple.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
When I tell you, baby,
they ended
everybody
it.
Had that motherfucking purple and teal Charlotte Hornets all-star fucking jacket.
They did.
That starter jacket.
I want one today.
Personally. I actually would like one.
Yeah.
Jermaine Cole, if you are listening or anyone that has access to J. Cole,
mm-hmm.
I'll take a small.
I know I want an extra large.
And an extra large.
Yeah.
Thank you. You can just send that on up to Warner Music Group. Thank you
so kindly. Thank you kindly.
Thank you kindly. So that's that. Now let's talk about what it takes to be an owner, because why in 2023, when you've got in the NBA, I want to say it's upwards of 70% of the players. Mm-hmm. In the NFL, I know it's over 70% of the players that are black.
Yeah.
But then when you start looking at the ownership, it's zero. No, like, no black person has ever owned an NFL team in the entire history of the league. Mm-hmm. So let's just sit on that.
Mm-hmm.
Then I just told y'all with the NBA, we've had exactly two black owners. And right now, because of Jordan's sell of the Hornets, we're at zero. It was Bob Johnson, Michael Jordan, both billionaires in their own right. So why is that the case? And then even when you look at head coaches, that's gotten better in the NBA, but still not on par with the proportionality.
Right.
And the NFL head coach situation is always shit,
yeah.
Which is why it don't matter who be in the Super Bowl. If it's got a black coach, the whole black culture
is rooting,
rooting for.
Yeah. Or see also a black quarterback.
That's it.
Yep.
So it's like for my ranking for that, when I've not followed the season, it's black quarterback.
Yeah.
But see, sometimes, you know, nowadays we're getting to the point where it's two black quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Wonderful.
Now it's black quarterback and black coach.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the rare instance, because I remember this was Lovie Smith 1 year and Tony Dungy.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, shit.
Shout out to Tony Dungy.
Yes, I love Tony Dungy. Yep. And his beautiful wife. So then it goes to my third reserve item.
Which is?
The black wife.
That's
it is.
If you know, you know.
If you know,
this
you know.
Is about the code. You know what I'm saying? That's what this is. And you
yeah,
are
you
really
like,
keeping
am,
it real.
What am I going to do?
Who am I root for?
Who, how
my
am
team
I going
didn't
to,
make it. So right. Who am I rooting for in
and
this?
And that's what it's in that order. Yep. Black quarterback, black coach, black wife.
Though that's the criteria.
That's the hierarchy.
Yeah.
All right. So back to these, why we see no owners. So very few coaches, what I see even less of that I want to see more of, black general managers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm. Black team presidents. Shout out to my soror, who is the first black woman to be a team president for the Raiders.
Yes. I remember when that made the headlines.
Yes,
shout
yes.
out to her.
And that was just last year. So here and there, but it ain't doing how it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
Not when you've got 70% of the bodies on the field getting that motherfucking CTE and shit.
Right.
Are us.
Right, right.
You know, it's 70% of us in the NBA playing upwards of, I don't even know what they're doing now, 80-plus games a season.
Yeah.
All of that. So it's the wear and tear. And yes, they're getting paid. So let's be clear. No one's saying that these men are, you know, enslaved.
No, yeah.
They're getting compensated. But just, it's somebody told the joke. I don't recall which comedian. But just know if someone is signing Shaq's check for $100 million, just imagine how rich that motherfucker is. You know? So why so few black owners, hardly zero in the NFL? I actually had the experience a few years ago of dating a gentleman caller who was a minority owner mm-hmm. of an NFL team. And he was able to give me some more insight. So in addition to the cash, because mm-hmm. this man that I was dating was trying to be a majority owner back when the Carolina Panthers were
okay.
for sale.
Okay.
He actually was a part of the group that was included Sean Diddy Combs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They ultimately lost the bid to one of these what? Private equity
yeah.
billionaires.
Yeah.
So that's who now owns the Carolina Panthers. And the Panthers ain't been right since, by the way.
So there's that.
So there's that. Just if you know, you know. So this gentleman caller was telling me a little bit about the process.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to, of course, first and foremost, you have to financially qualify. We know that. But if you're talking about even attempting to have majority ownership in any NFL team, any NBA team, billionaire status is the minimum entry point.
Absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and the reality is we do have a black billionaire class.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God. Finally. We were just talking about this on the show, right?
Yeah.
In terms of the BET sale.
Yes.
So we've got the Tyler Perrys. We've got the Robert F. Smiths.
Yep.
We've got the Byron Allens.
Yes.
We've got the Puffs, the Dr. Dre's.
Yep.
Even. So
Rihanna.
Rihanna. Yes. Beyonce, I'm sure.
Oprah.
Sean Combs. Oprah. Yeah. Sean Carter. It's
yeah,
got to be close.
For sure.
Yeah. So they're there. So now what else is it that's prohibiting black ownership in these professional spaces where black players dominate? I was shocked to find out, people are now learning about this, it's becoming public, but you have to be approved, I want to say unanimously,
mm-hmm.
by the other team owners. So this is, okay, we see your money, right? We see you have the even experience in terms of CEO of this, president of this, da-da-da. But now, as we say in the sorority, do you get the vote? Do you get the vote? And what we know about the vote is it's very subjective.
Absolutely, and can be easily influenced.
Easily influenced. By easily influenced, where the subtext is anti-black. Mm-hmm. Let's just say it plain. Because we're talking about a professional sports league, especially in the NFL and NBA, that is about power. And when you start having black people in the helm of the true power position, which is the ownership position, when you start talking about, I'll give you an example, D, when you start talking about a player owner negotiation, what that, you know, dynamic looks like, I think I know the concern of the traditional white ownership. When you're talking about Jerry Jones, let's just talk about it. They do not want to see an era where the football player is empowered.
Yeah.
And when you've got a black team owner, there's too much fear or risk that that team owner is going to have more empathy, more compassion, more understanding when it comes to the plight, the needs, and the mandates of a black team member.
I'm not surprised. When you're running an organization, you want the parts to move in whatever way that you see necessary. Mm-hmm. And these owners who have an interest in continuing and furthering that sort of gatekeeping, that's exactly what they're going to do. They're going to keep those players paid
in their place.
Yeah. In their place.
They need to keep the Negroes in their place. Yeah. And if you ascend, whether it's Byron Allen, who I know was trying to potentially put a bid together for the Broncos, mm-hmm. I believe, recently. Mm-hmm. The Washington team just got acquired, I believe. There was some talk about Byron and maybe somebody else. I can't remember who, but somebody was trying to make a play there. When they get scared about what the collective bargaining looks like, mm-hmm. when a black man in these conversations so far, not that a black woman couldn't be in it, we're going to get to Condoleezza Rice in a minute, because she was trying to make a play to be the commish.
Yeah.
The commissioner of the NFL. So this is all very
That would have
interesting,
been so
right?
interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Condoleezza Rice is an interesting bitch.
There's a lot of things I like about her. A lot of things that I don't.
And a lot of things that we don't.
Yeah.
And for me, that's actually okay.
Same.
You know what I mean? For me, that's okay. I can really rock with you in these capacities and not others.
Yeah.
And that just makes you, to me, a very complicated, dynamic human being. So
Mississippi flipping all.
That's it.
Because you know.
Yeah, and I want to say she was born and raised in Alabama, so it tracks.
There you go.
Yeah, she said, I'm still going down there to get my soft roller set.
There you go.
So okay. And who's going to stop? Who's going to check me?
Nobody. Can you imagine Condoleezza turning around, looking at you if you try to stop her, change her hair? No, okay. But so
can you do a silk press on you, bitch? What? Okay. This is the same roller set that got me in the Oval.
Okay.
So you better stop playing with me.
You better ask somebody about Miss Rice.
Miss Rice. So that's the deal there. We'll see what happens with J. Cole and his ownership.
Best of luck to him.
Best of luck to him. I remember Nelly actually had a minority ownership of the Charlotte Hornets, or maybe it was the Bobcats. I think he was part of that Bobcats era.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
What's nice is to see him back with Ashanti, though.
That makes me so happy.
Me too.
They love each other.
They look extremely. Yep. And I'm not really a fan of running it back.
Mm-hmm. Spinning the block like that.
Generally speaking.
Yeah.
But I guess when it's right, it's right.
It's right. And I think after how many years has it been since they've been together? So many years.
It's been like 10 years, I think, since they've been broken up.
Yeah.
Like a long time.
Yeah. So like the points have been proven at this point. I will leave your ass alone. So.
And I think after that Irv Gotti shit came out, she was like, you know what? Let me circle. Let me look back. Let me look at it again. Yeah,
let
me look at it again.
Since you want to play, and she own her shit now. She
Absolutely.
Recorded all
she
that
She recorded
math.
Everything.
Yeah. Which Good is for
brilliant.
Her.
Brilliant. I just always thought she was just such an exceptionally beautiful
Absolutely.
Woman.
She looks, and she's looking better now than she's ever looked.
Yes.
Ashanti looks great.
Resources.
Very much so.
And I'm a big fan of it. Actually, I was having this conversation with a girlfriend over the weekend. Those of us that were kind of born with natural beauty, I think those of us of a certain age in that category, we need to kind of reassess, because there's been this kind of denial to participate in some of the cosmetic enhancements of the moment, if I can say it that way. And well, I don't need that. And bitch, let me tell you what you're doing, sitting over there trying to be stubborn and talking about talking about this natural beauty bullshit. Dustin,
hey,
this your friend talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
Bitch, you're losing your competitive advantage.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm done with that. I'm trying to get everything.
And guess what? Your body your choice. You know what I'm saying? You can get whatever you done want done to your body.
So whatever Miss Ashanti is kind of just conservatively opting into,
it was working.
It's working fabulous.
She looks incredible. I just saw her performing in Long Beach at the iHeart R&B Festival a couple weeks ago. Memorial Day weekend.
Okay.
When I was in LA, I saw her. She looked and sounded incredible.
Yeah,
so good for her.
Just love all of that. That's all looking great for her. Okay, so now moving on to this partnership between Yale University of New Haven in Connecticut, obviously, and a prison there. This is last week. Seven men who are serving time currently at McDougal Walker Correctional Institution, they made up the very first cohort, first of hopefully many cohorts. They graduated from a collaboration between University of New Haven's Prison Education Program and the Yale Prison Education Initiative.
Mm.
So this is a new program. It started in 2021. So this started in the pandemic. Yale and University of New Haven formed a partnership where they're offering student inmates, and I even like that term, right? Student inmates. I'm going to get to why that's important in a minute. They get a path to either two-year degrees, associate degrees, or a four-year bachelor's degree.
I love this so far.
Right? I don't know. I guess I think I was just, when I first saw the headline, D, I was like, is it too good to be true? Which is a sad, you know, kind of commentary on society. So I said, like, let me look a little deeper. And when I looked deeper, I like it.
I love this.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I mean, this is really the epitome of what we should be talking about when we talk about, quote, prison reform and prison and you know, incarceration supposedly for rehabilitation.
Exactly.
You know, if it's supposed to be in America something more than just punitive, which we say it is, this is what rehabilitation looks like.
Yep.
How are we rehabilitating people and not getting them in a better position to exit the institution and come out and contribute to society and take care of themselves and their families?
Yep.
So this is what this looks like. So this program provides classes at the institution, McDougal Walker, and the Federal Women's Jail. So shout out to the ladies. And it's part of a consortium that encompasses now 15 college and prison systems. So this is replicated amongst 15 different partnerships of prisons and universities throughout the country.
We need more.
Yeah.
I love this. A lot of people make mistakes early in life or late in life, whatever, and they find themselves in that position. I love that this is available.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it dignifies a lot of the student inmates in a way that is so healthy for them.
Even that that framing, right?
Yeah.
Words matter. Student inmates.
Student inmates.
Gives you an identity other than just being in jail.
Exactly. And that's necessary, like you said, to proper rehabilitation.
Absolutely.
So I love everything about this, and I really hope that lots of Black inmates are being included in this focus.
Absolutely. Yeah. I know many of us saw the viral images of one young man in tears, just, you know, like you could tell it was that,
yes.
You know, that hard cry, you know, like, you were trying to hold
what
it back.
What was it every day?
You know. No, because that's that cry when you done worked your ass off of something. You know what I mean?
Hey, you're thinking about it. You're thinking about how you got over.
Never would have made it
you went up that
mountain. You.
I thought I lost it all, okay?
Listen.
Yeah.
But I made it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this program was started by a woman named Zelda Rowland, and she believes that it is transformative. This is her quote. We believe that this is a transformative program. It has the potential to make a generational impact. We believe that we're transforming not just individual students' lives, yes, she says students' lives, but also the institutions that we work in, both in universities and correctional system. And that's right. Like, if I see old boy getting his paperwork together and he's tasseled, he's got his regalia on, and I'm just sitting here in my jumpsuit, I'm thinking differently.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about the different possibilities. Listen, you got to do the time anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Why not do something constructive with the time? So
absolutely.
That when you come out, the absolutely. Story that you're telling a potential employer is not, it doesn't start and stop with, I did this, I made this mistake, and I'm getting out, and I just want to get another opportunity. That's the story that a lot of people are forced to try to sell.
Mm-hmm.
How much more compelling is this story, Dustin? Well, you know, I made a poor choice in my younger days or whenever, another time in life. But not only during my rehabilitation period did I reflect and come to a better understanding around choices, responsibility, and accountability when provided the opportunity to advance my education, to further myself, to strengthen my skill set. I took full advantage, and now I sit before you, a graduate of so-and-so, so-and-so with this da-da-da-da-da degree.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. Bada bing, bada boom.
Yeah.
So now I'm not asking you to just kind of blindly trust that I'm rehabilitated. I'm putting something in front of you that demonstrates how I have done the work.
Which is tremendously valuable in that sort of circumstance, right?
Yep.
Anything that you can use as an asset or a tool to further legitimize yourself.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And separate you from the crowd.
Yeah, separate you and show you as being prepared for this next, you know, chapter of your life post-release.
Absolutely.
I think that that is great to have that in your arsenal.
And let's just say, and one of the reasons that this program caught so much attention, because it's not brand new, right, that people are getting advanced degrees or college classes and coursework while in institutions. That happens. Look, you know, I'm happy to report at least 20% of prisoners acquire some kind of higher education while they're incarcerated. The reason why this is hitting so you know, special for the culture is because it's Yale.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just tell the truth. It's because it's Yale University, my darling.
And the prestige.
The prestige is an Ivy League institution. And for whatever, you know, elitist classes and bullshit people want to talk about, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? Bill Clinton went there. Period. That's where presidents go. That's where the elite of the elite go. So when you are a student inmate and your alumni, your fellow alumnus are the former president of the United States of America, one of the inmates said people thought he was playing. This is Marcus Harvin, one of the inmates that just graduated. He says this. He says, people even think I'm lying sometimes. So I'll show them my jail ID and my Yale ID.
How about that?
Not my University of Phoenix ID. No disrespect.
No disrespect. Get it how whatsoever.
You get it. Get it how you get it, baby, for sure.
But the fact that this is Yale is relevant to the point that we're making with this story.
It is.
You know, and I love that that is the net that they cast. I love that they went that high.
They went that high.
In the ranking of educational institutions.
That's
I love that Yale is an option for these people who have found themselves in that circumstance.
Absolutely.
I'm a person who advocates for inmates. For inmates
Absolutely.
To have this sort of opportunity, everybody is not a lost damn cause. You know what I'm
Most
saying?
Most people aren't.
Most people are not.
Are not beyond rehabilitation, which is why they've been sentenced in the first place.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes when that's the determination, they go ahead and give you that capital punishment, truth be told.
So I love, like I said, I love that this exists. It's hopeful. It is aspirational for these student inmates.
Absolutely.
And those are the things that you need to get you through that time.
And this is the kind of, absolutely, because I've interviewed a lot of inmates in my capacity as a journalist. Obviously, I go way back with a lot of inmates during my time as representing them as their criminal defense lawyer. And one of the things, Dustin, that I used to talk to my clients about going back to that era of my career was like, when you get out, and you will get out, right? What's the story we're going to tell? How are we crafting narrative around your journey and your plan?
Mm-hmm.
And you got to have a plan, right? Like how you do that kind of time. People, you know, we talked on this show, Dustin, just in case you missed the episode, he made it clear he can't do. How much time can you do?
None.
Okay.
That ain't for me. That is not for me. I'm claustrophobic.
Right.
I can't. It's just not for me. So I know what side of things I got to stay on.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You know what kind of lifestyle you need to live.
That's it.
Hilarious. Well, I've always felt like I could do a year or two of federal, you know, but we'll see. But here's the deal. That's one or two. But, you know, you got people out doing real, like, hard time, a long bid, as we say. How is somebody doing 12 years? How is somebody doing 15 years? How is somebody doing 25 years in prison? And the reality is you have to have a hope.
Mm-hmm.
That is what keeps people going, doesn't it? They have to have something they are living for.
Yeah.
Something they are aspiring to, thriving to. And what better than to finish this degree and then many times go on to an advanced degree.
Yeah.
Many of them become professors.
Absolutely.
In these institutions and beyond. So it's
and what a really great good thing. What a great professor you'll become with that sort of perspective and experience.
Absolutely.
To contrast other experiences with as you work on theories and different shit like this I think this is great.
It's just an all-win situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things that I hope catches fire all across the country. Like I said earlier, we've got at least 15 partnerships like this already in the works. I'd like to see 15,000.
Absolutely.
Because if we're going to be having these prisons in the prison industrial system and complex, which is a for-profit machine that is immoral at its core, the very least we can do is offer this type of opportunity mm-hmm. while we still work on deconstructing the system itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
agree.
Let's be clear.
I
both
agree.
Things can be happening at the same time.
I agree 100%.
For those that want to say, well, it's just a Band-Aid. Well, shit. Don't you have to put a Band-Aid on before the complete healing
you
is done?
You have to. Yeah, it's necessary.
Exactly right. So I'm happy to see it. I'm really happy around student inmates having a broader sense of identity and purpose and value. Like I was saying, like I had clients that would be like, well, I'm a felon. No. You committed a felony.
There you go.
You are not a felon. You are a human being.
Yeah.
And they're different.
Yeah.
Well, I'm an ex-con. No, my darling. You were convicted.
Of something. Mm-hmm.
You have now paid your debt to society, and now you are deserving of another opportunity. Mm-hmm. So just that framing of felon, ex-con, inmate, that's not who you are. We talked about that in Tulsa, slave.
Yeah.
No, baby, you are not your condition. They're different.
Yep.
Our ancestors were enslaved African humans. They were not slaves. That's a noun. It's who are you?
Yeah.
So that's describing your condition. You were enslaved. But your identity, that's something different. So really, really happy for these people. Now, I wanted to kind of tether the would-be NFL commissioner Condoleezza Rice into it.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was quoted recently at a big talk that she was giving where she was talking about the importance of skills. Now, one of my producers on my Griot show, she's our social media guru.
Shout out to the Griot.
That
Williams.
Airs every day at 6 p.m. Check mm-hmm. your local listings.
Good work over there you're doing.
Thank you, my darling. So I was playing with her. I was like, well, since you like to put up these damn viral clips and shit, getting my ass all smoked up. But, no, shout out to her because it's doing exactly what it's supposed to do.
She is killing that.
I was like, get your ass to work. And can you make me a little social clip that, remember when Candy was on the Housewives reunion of Atlanta and she was like, lies.
So I
want my little baby producer to put my face on Candy mm-hmm. and then dub my voice with skills.
Yeah.
Skills.
The skills. Yeah. Uh-huh.
This is what I was trying to tell them down over at the Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
Skills. And so now Condoleezza is saying skills. And she's right. She's saying that while, yes, of course, a college degree is going to statistically put you in a space for considerable more money, the reality is more and more companies, big companies, mm-hmm. Google, Apple, I think Microsoft, mm-hmm. they are eliminating, Dustin, a lot of these four-year degree requirements for a lot of the jobs because they are understanding that, first of all, two things can be true. Yes, a college degree is still going to yield a dividend in terms of capital. So I'm miseducation. I'll say go to school till they tell your ass you can't go no more.
For sure.
And don't just go to school and don't get no damn skills because you done missed the point. I actually just had to say that to the graduating class at Benedict College last year in mm-hmm. South Carolina when I gave the commencement. Let's be very clear. This incredible, wonderful degree that we're all so excited about, if you set your ass around for 4 years and acquire this degree and don't have a thing that you can do at a high level that makes you competitive in this marketplace, you wasted your damn time.
And money.
And somebody money. The government money, your mama
somebody,
money.
Yeah. Somebody's
the
money.
The
it's funny
money.
Now because
yeah.
you don't want to do nothing.
Right.
You know? And I love that. So
it's true. Like that meme was like, you know, we was crying that damn hard at your graduation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you sitting around driving Grubhub. Is that the skill that you acquired? Get the fuck out of here. So skills. So Condoleezza Rice is saying this. She told Fortune publication that she's in favor of skills-based hiring. And keep in mind the context. So she's a woman, Phi Beta Kappa, highest, oldest academic honor society, mm-hmm. master's degree in political science, doctorate degree in political science at the young age of 25.
That's no easy feat.
That's no easy feat, baby. People be 30-something, 40-something with a PhD.
Yeah.
This young lady got that at 25, okay? She holds at least 14 honorary doctorates. That's 13 more than me.
Oh, okay. And 14 more than me. I might be in the negative. Right? Actually, they might be like, and just in case you thought
first,
you was getting
first
one.
The two you get, yeah. you gonna have to. Shut your ass up, Dustin. Something wrong with you. Okay. So she's also currently the director at the Hoover Institute, which is at Stanford mm-hmm. University. So this is a woman of the highest academic
pedigree.
And she's still saying, don't get the shit twisted.
Yeah.
While I am leading at Stanford and this, that, and been decorated and all this shit, what is also true is that the skills ultimately is what will serve you.
Yep.
And she is very much in favor of, and she makes a really good point from the politics standpoint, which is, you know, America has got to do a better job, she says, of making sure that we have possibilities, especially within, this is a quote from Condoleezza Rice, with the possibilities for remote learning that we saw obviously come through in the pandemic, I think there's a big opportunity. We need to rethink the whole scope of possibilities. And that's, to me, some candidate, you know, and in fact, when I was reading the article, I want to say the governor of Pennsylvania just signed an executive order when they just took office, eliminating the 4-year degree requirement from something like 90% of government jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So do we know what that does in terms of opening up the marketplace
mm-hmm.
for a variety of diversity factors? So not just race, right? But now people that are first generation,
mm-hmm.
people that are from lower income, people that for whatever reason, that 4-year degree is a little more difficult to acquire.
Yeah.
They now have an opportunity for these, you know, well-paid, high-benefit package government jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the politician or the party or the candidate that taps into this and stops that gatekeeping shit, because sometimes this is where the criticisms of elitism have water.
Yeah.
When you're using a 4-year degree requirement, Dustin, or a master's degree requirement, or blah, blah, blah,
mm-hmm.
as a roadblock
mm-hmm.
to say code word, we only want white men
mm-hmm.
because statistically that's who's better positioned to attain these types of credentials.
Mm-hmm.
That's called discrimination. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not on its face, it's discriminatory intent. So therefore, when we shed that requirement, now that doesn't mean that if you have that requirement also and the skills, guess what you're going to do? You're going to stand out above and beyond.
Right, right.
So there's no, let's be clear in this conversation, y'all. Don't be like, Auntie E said drop out of school, so fuck this shit. Don't go to the registration right now.
That's definitely not what
Please
you're
do
saying.
Not.
Yeah.
Please do not go withdraw.
If what anything, I'm sorry, go,
no,
ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
no.
If anything, what you're saying is sign up for those programs.
Yes.
Do that. Yeah.
And make sure your skill set is tight as well, because gone is the day. And see, you know, now let me just go ahead and tell a little bit more truth since we're talking about
mm-hmm.
it. This was really frustrating for me during the bus driver conversation, Dustin, because people really weren't understanding. Some people, let me say, some of y'all really, really got it, and I'm so glad.
Mm-hmm.
But some people were missing it because I graduated.
Willfully, in my opinion.
And
but
a lot
go
of them
ahead.
Were. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was the messenger. But mm-hmm. we'll talk about that another time. So, listen, I graduated from UNC Chapel Hill at 20 years old, young, all of this, went to school with some brilliant minds, brilliant black minds, mm-hmm. to be clear, which is why UNC is along with Harvard right now at the Supreme Court. Probably by the time y'all listen to this episode, affirmative action as we know it will probably be no more. We'll see. Because that's how threatened they are. So this is the proof of why this and skills and academia, because if the academia part didn't matter, Dustin, they wouldn't be fighting so hard right now at the Supreme Court to make it so that UNC and Harvard and the elite schools cannot use race as a determining factor in admissions. That's how you know it matters, because they are willing to fight to the death to take that off the table, to take away from the fact that those of us, UNC didn't even admit its first student, Dustin, until I want to say 74. 1974. Are you kidding me? But yet, you know what a skill set, you know what a criteria that can be used on your application is? Legacy.
So there you go, the boys club.
The boys
and,
club.
Which becomes the girls club,
which becomes
right?
the white women's club.
That's
because
right.
they actually benefit from affirmative action more than anybody else,
yep.
including black people.
Yep.
But they don't want to talk about that. But yeah, so that's how we know it matters. That's why they're so pressed to take that off the table. But at the time that I enrolled, I'll be the first to admit proudly and boldly that I was advantaged by a program they considered my high SAT, my high GPA, and my blackness,
mm-hmm.
and my first generation college graduate status and my lower socioeconomic free lunch kid ass as a part of my holistic application to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill at 16, at which I was granted a full academic merit scholarship. So that's just my perspective on it. That's just giving you some positioning. Now, I attended school with several brilliant black minds, some of which were not positioned like me. Some of them were the children of physicians and dentists, and normally they were the first black dentist in their hometowns, in Wilmington, in Charlotte, in this, that. It was awesome. But here's the problem. Some of my classmates, and yes, some of the black classmates, came out of our elite institution, and they thought that was going to be good enough. They thought that once they got that Carolina degree,
they were done.
That they were done. And it's not just Carolina. It's University of Michigan, Ann Arbor.
Yeah, for sure. Big Ten.
It's UVA.
Yep.
Hey, hey, Cavaliers. I'm talking to y'all.
Ohio State.
It's Ohio State. The Ohio State.
The
it's
Ohio
the U.
Yep.
It's Notre UCLA. Dame. Vanderbilt. Don't tell me. Don't give me some them Vanderbilt motherfuckers. Shout out to Brian Jones.
Yeah. Hey, B.
But yeah. And it's beautiful. Nobody loves to see an educated black person more than me.
Yeah.
However, that alone will not save you. And that's what Condoleezza Rice is talking about. It's also the skills, the skills, the skills. Now that you've got the cert, let's just call, I say that type of degree or any type of degree, all it is a passport.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's just going to get you into the interview room, if that. But once you get in that room, if you cannot convince and make a compelling argument for the thing you do better than your peers that is worth being paid, particularly at a high level for, you fail the assignment. And so that is why all of this has to work together. So whether we're talking about inmates in Connecticut or whether we're talking about undergrads at UT Austin.
Yeah, yeah.
Y'all, please understand this is not about bus driving. This is not about medical degrees. This is not about a top 10 school or a community college. This is about, because Condoleezza Rice talks about that too in this article, Dustin. She says, what would it look like if we sold American youth, particularly, but whoever, any age, it's never too late, a construct that you go to community college for 2 years, which is much more economically feasible for many
For many more people.
A much more diverse group of student body. Get, because guess what? Math is math. English is English.
No matter where you study.
History is history.
Yeah.
So some of those basic, writing is writing. So some of those basic first 2 year curriculum items, you can knock that out at the community college level. You can even knock that out remotely. And then maybe you make a higher investment in your junior and senior year. And you can still, guess what your degree gonna still say? University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, UNC Chapel Hill.
Yep.
So what if we destigmatized the community college transfer student? Because that's, you know, I'm a American Swiss young leader. And when I was over there, one of the things that the Swiss do very well, they don't even have an automatic presumption of four-year college ascension for everybody. That's an option. Some do it. But about 50% of their population, Dustin, they do skills-based apprenticeships. It's more than an internship, where they are working full-time as an apprentice, and not just kind of the way, it can be vocational. It can be, even though we think about vocation, we think of blue-collar only, which, yes, of course, it can be plumbing. It can be laying tile. It can be.
And there's nothing wrong or shameful about any of that.
It's actually a whole situation in a very good way.
Quite essential and quite lucrative.
Quite lucrative.
Let's be clear.
Home heating and air. It's just all of that's on the table.
Right.
And that's really what we're talking about, is let's put it all on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And also, in Switzerland and in other European countries, they have 2 year apprenticeship full time for attorneys, insurance executives, other high-level executive leadership roles. So the way in which, so yeah, y'all, this is a bigger conversation. I'm going to move on to Big Red. But but I really want us all to really stop being so in our feelings and so, like, sensitive around, like, blue collar, white collar. They call it now new collar. That's what they're calling this new generation that, you know,
I love it.
Condoleezza is talking about, where you could have $250,000 a year job at Microsoft with nobody's degree. Yep. That's called new collar.
Yep.
You know, but guess what you can do? Code your ass off.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which is a what?
Skill. All right, I'm going to leave it there. You know, I'll be getting hot around the collar about these motherfucking topics. All right, so who else is hot around the collar is the great Berry Gordy.
Mm.
You know he had to be great because he had all the you-know-whats. Move on to the topic.
Because I don't want to disrespect nobody,
right.
But you know.
Because you know what? I'm actually glad you brought that up because, okay, so now because he brought it up, I'm going to bring it up. What I really don't like, and he's a legend, but I really don't like how Smokey Robinson just recently came out of his face talking about he bagged Diana Ross 150 years ago. Did you see that?
I definitely did. He talked about it while he was promoting that filthy ass new album of his where every song title is a sexual innuendo. Now, Smokey, I doubt your stack's still smoking, okay? At 80, whatever. So, anyway.
And, but also, here's the other thing, Smokey. You are still a married man today. You like, if I'm your wife, we have a serious motherfucking problem.
Old or not?
Old, not. Happened 55 years ago. Why are you and if I'm Diana Ross, I might put a hit out on you.
What? If I was married to Smokey, you would have heard, as soon as I seen that interview, all you would have heard was my cane clicking on them on them marble tile floors right. At home, getting up out of that room. Smokey, hell yeah.
Yeah. I just don't think it's a good look to ever speak on your D.
It's not let's player.
Be let's yeah.
It's not player.
You heard it right there. Dustin Ross says not player. But are you seriously talking on your D, sir, 40 years after the fact when everybody's still alive?
Yeah.
You look crazy.
Yeah, was they even supposed to be fucking? Wasn't sex legal?
Well,
back
I don't
then
know if sex was legal. I know they were probably both married to other people at the time. She might have still been fucking with Berry Gordy, which is how we
maybe
got on this topic.
Yep. And he going to tell him. I think that's lame,
I just thought it was so true. Just, again, back to last week's episode. At your big age, sir. Why are you choosing to further damage your legacy?
Why? You now we know you're the clown that had the tears you were singing about. Tears of a clown. Nigga, you was talking about your damn self. It's you. It's been you all along.
It was you.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that was trash. Okay, now, in other Motown news, Berry Gordy is suing this guy named Timothy Bogart. He is the son of a late music exec, Neil Bogart. Mm-hmm. If that name sounds familiar, he was a big fucking deal.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now the son is doing this movie. He's already done it. A 2023 film called Spinning Gold. Is it out? I think they say it came out, like a soft release.
I ain't seen the shit.
Right. The film was released.
And I watch everything.
This is true. The film was released in spring of 2023 mm-hmm. By Universal Filmed Entertainment Group. Berry Gordy is suing for this reason. He's suing for defamation, invasion of privacy, and intentional infliction of emotional distress.
Oh, he's pissed.
He's all pissed. These are all big torts. And here's why he's suing, Dustin. He says that the film depicts a false narrative and defamatory fiction as truth. He says it's a made-up storyline in which Berry Gordy is wrongfully and dishonestly portrayed as a thug
mm-hmm.
and as a mobster who goes as far as to order a murder for hire. The picture is also unlikely to be a commercial success. The shade.
Ooh.
However, the picture does succeed in defaming and otherwise causing great damage to Berry Gordy. Obviously, he's right about that because we ain't never heard of the shade.
Right, right.
But at the same time, which is actually kind of gets to the merit of why bother suing. So some saw this in the headlines like, damn, you know, Berry Gordy, we didn't even know the film existed. But now that we do, let me go check it out.
I'm not mad.
But I'm not mad either. Tell me why you're not mad.
I'm not mad because if it's a lie, it's a damn lie. Yeah. And what you're not going to do, you have to remember the history here. Mm-hmm. Berry Gordy was successful in music at a time when it was hard for black executives to even be such.
Period.
Okay? So yes. You don't know what kind of battle. I can only begin to imagine how hard he had to work and fight to make Motown what it was.
Absolutely.
Against insurmountable odds. And you're going to try to frame me as a fucking mobster?
It's also like super anti-black, too, for everything that you just said. So in the film, they have him kind of putting a hit out on this white man's daddy, purportedly because they tried to lure away the Isley Brothers and Gladys Knight from Motown to join their roster, which was white-owned. You know, again, it's very much out of the five heartbeats.
Right. And no, we're not having it.
And we're not having it. And I do not blame Berry Gordy for one second for suing because, like you said, a lie is a lie. And you have to consider how this is going to age.
For
so,
sure.
You know, right now he's around like, oh, that's some bullshit, whatever. In 50 years, when everybody's dead and gone,
people will believe that shit.
People will
believe
it because they want to believe it, too. Yep. They want to believe that there had to be something nefarious going mm-hmm. on for a black man to reach the level of iconic stature as Berry Gordy did with what he created at Motown.
That's because that's violent to me, right? To make up a story like that. And that sort of aggression from those white people who did that.
And they, I'm about to say, baby, because what we do know about the music industry is there were some gangsters in the music industry.
For sure.
Literally, the mafia, the Italian mafia.
And he saw that.
Yes.
So he's like, you're not gonna paint me as such. You're not going to do that. Not on my damn watch. Yeah. And I don't blame Barry. It's time, Barry. So Barry said only hit he ordering is Hitsville.
Hitsville.
Okay.
That's it.
The house he built.
Yeah,
so I'm not mad at him.
He's suing, and he's suing for $10 million. So
I hope he gets 11.
I hope he gets 11. And what I know he will probably get because, you know, unless they have some major proof, which I know they don't, of any of this being factual or actual.
Pull that damn movie down.
Yeah.
Shut the movie down.
The whole
movie's
gonna be
shut down. Burn the file.
Yep.
I'm not mad at that. I hope Barry sues the hell out of them.
Yeah, cease and desist beyond. Yeah. So it's and I think it proves a really good point, Dustin, that I believe in. I believe this in politics and I believe this in life.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are like, oh, let that shit go. It's what you said. It's enough for me. Mm-hmm. I'm not letting shit go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had to deal
not
with this.
Not that.
No, I'm not too much. Matter of fact.
Like, for real.
I dealt with this on a very, very small scale during my Roni era, right,
mm-hmm.
where people were so threatened by the way in which I showed up on the show that they tried to do a little black ops political, you know, hardballing and pull a receipt from where I allowed my law license to lapse in active status because I had not practiced in the state of North Carolina for 10 years, thus not compelled to pay dues in a state where I no longer practice law, right? And then, oh my God, it goes to the Daily Mail and Ebony K. Williams' law license is suspended. And everybody, you know, were like, girl, don't worry about that. We know what it is. Because these were other attorneys, Dustin. And they're like, oh, well, it's a nothing story. But no, people already feel a way about a credible, educated black woman holding space in this way. So now I have to address it. Remember I got on that Instagram Live?
Yeah, I remember.
And went to motherfucking town.
Yep. Because, as you should have, but it's just silly that people that don't even understand anything about the process of having a law license have chosen to latch onto that.
But that's because
to find a way to tear you down.
To find a way. Right. And it's like you know, you're always looking to undermine the credibility of successful black people.
Exactly.
And that's just really what this comes down to. And for that reason and that reason alone, I believe that we the most,
mm-hmm.
I think this is true for everybody, but black people the most, when people do that little fuck shit,
mm-hmm.
trying to play with your reputation
mm-hmm.
or your credibility,
mm-hmm.
you gotta stomp that shit out
full
on sight.
Full hard stop.
Yeah.
Full hard stop. Yep. So good, Barry.
Good,
I'm glad.
Barry. And I like that you seem to be a little bit more discreet
mm-hmm.
with all of your personal dealings.
Mm-hmm.
And Smokey could take a hint out of your book.
Yep, and I hope he step on one of their feet on the way out the courtroom. Excuse me. I hope he step on it hard, too. They deserve it, Barry. They fucking with you, man. And you didn't been through too much for that.
And Barry still looks pretty good.
Yeah,
You know, he's not aged very much. He looks pretty good. Him and Diana Ross both look pretty good.
Him and her daughter look just alike.
Yeah.
You know what they say? He spit her out.
Yeah,
she looked just like
him. He don't need no kind of paternity test.
Nope.
Rhonda looked just like him.
And she got it. She's successful and smart.
Pretty much so.
Like, so I love this. And they're going to make sure that their father, her and his other children. Yeah,
that
legacy is protected in that way.
That's a paramount legacy for the whole music industry, but black culture. Like, I don't really think a lot of us sit and reflect because, and I'm big on like some of these legends, right? Like, we just lost Harry Belafonte.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Quincy Jones is still with us.
Mm-hmm.
Berry Gordy is still with us for a little bit longer. I hate that I never got a chance to meet the Diane Carroll. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is royalty, really. And I think we need to, not for nothing, Stevie Wonder.
Yeah.
You know, like, there is a genre, a cohort of black royalty that we just need to, I think, take a little more reverence with, to
I
be
agree.
Honest with you.
I agree, especially considering the time that those songs were coming out and what was going on in America, especially
mm-hmm.
for black Americans at that time.
Yes.
This music is very valuable to our history, right? We
yes.
need to protect this shit.
The music, the ownership, the stature,
yeah.
you know? And then, of course, there's the greats that left you know, far too soon. Like, you know, so we can never, you know, we'll never have an era of a silver citizen in Whitney Houston or Michael Jackson. Right. Or you know what I mean? Yep. Like, so for those that make it that far, like, that shit is special.
Yep.
I don't care what nobody's saying.
I agree, Ebony.
Really want to, like, protect that a little bit better than we're doing.
Stay on their ass, Barry. Yeah. Keep your foot on their neck. Stay on it.
That's it, Barry. All right, y'all. Well, that's what we're going to do for this week's show. We want to thank y'all again so much for tuning in. Next week, we will be back in session.
Yes.
In the meantime, stay safe. Keep the faith. I done told y'all to wear your damn SPF 50, preferably.
Yep, and above.
And above.
Some of y'all need it.
Okay. All y'all black asses need it. All y'all need it.
Some of y'all elbows and knees need 60.
You need the 60 and the moisturizer.
Yeah, get the one for babies. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Waterproof. Can't stand you. And in the meantime, Dustin, what you want people to do?
Read your terms and conditions. And I know y'all took that from me on that show.
Everybody was tagging you. Yeah.
Okay.
But we see you.
You're the main one, because I'm going to get with Barry Gordy's lawyers on your ass. Okay? Y'all are the main ones better read your terms and conditions.
We see you.
Yes.
Holding Court is an Interval Presents original production from Uppity Productions in association with Dossie Media. Executive producer and host, Ebony K. Williams. Co-host and producer, Dustin Ross. From Interval Presents, executive producers Alan Coy and Jay Kleinberg. Produced, of course, by Ashley J. Hobbs. Editing, sound design, and mix by Stephanie Morell. Original music by Epidemic Sound. Video editing by Kaysen Alexander and Courtney Deans. Consultant Carla Wilmaris. Special thanks to Operations Lead Sarah Yu, Business Development Lead Sheffy Ellen Swag, and Marketing Lead Samira Still.